Hi, and welcome to Hyperfixer, the podcast where we invite various interesting people on to talk about their niche area of interest. They could just talk forever about it. Here are your hosts, I'm Ali.
And I'm Nigel.
And today, for the third time, we have Louise. Louise, how are you?
Hello, everyone. I'm doing
Louise,
good,
coming in for the hat trick.
Even though today is not morbid time.
Sadly.
I feel like this is something we brought up a couple of episodes ago when we were talking to Andy. The fact that, like, out of all the things we've tried to do and all the people we've interviewed, the fact that we decided randomly to do a piss take of an episode where we talked about Morbius, a film none of us had seen, that's the most enduring thing. That's the only thing that happens in the server as well, is that people,
like, people
say, this episode's about Morbius, yeah.
And we're like, yeah, obviously.
We're keeping it alive. It won't be lost media, so to speak.
Which brings us nicely on. What are you talking about?
Lost media.
Hey. Oh,
I love this topic to bits.
Perfect. Class. So, why lost media, Louise? Why have you picked it for today's episode? How did you first get into it?
Lost media.
I sound cool because I'm vaping.
Lost media is a topic that fascinates me. I think because of the possibilities. It's about something that often people have not seen for years. And there's an air of mystery. And often in these searches, as I'll get into later, you're chasing very strange rabbit holes. Like, there are companies that have gone bust 10 years ago that you're trying to chase up. You're chasing up people who worked on production and are like, why are you contacting me about this? And there's just an inherently fascinating quality to something that we cannot access and that we have to imagine, I think.
Yeah, this was something which sort of marked, almost thematically, a lot of the early episodes of this podcast, was that people had these different lost media in various forms. You know, you mentioned it in your episode. There was some in the episode on Doctor Who we did, because there's so many episodes of that missing. Also in the episode on Basic Instinct, like, a lot of people brought up certain things, pieces of media that they're looking for that aren't available anymore. So, like, what is it that's so universal that we all seem to have this experience of not being able to find? Like, why is it so universal?
I think it's because it's very easy for lost media to get lost. And I'm going to, I guess, talk a bit about...
Hey, media, get lost!
People just kick it out of their houses. It's so sad. But I'm just going to talk about the precise definitions, because I think it's interesting how the internet defines it. So in a very broad sense...
Are there subcategories, or is it just...
Kinda. I'll try and explain. So obviously, lost media is very broad, because it's a piece of media that has been destroyed or is inaccessible. And that covers a lot of things. There is an awful lot of historical lost media. You can call the Library of Alexandria lost media. There are lost paintings, all sorts. But the internet does not focus on more historical cases, usually. Which is fair enough, because it is very difficult to recover a lost Roman manuscript without the proper training in archaeology and whatnot. Lost media, when described by internet commentators, tends to refer to more modern media. What gets a lot of focus is stuff from the past 30 years, often stuff from people's childhoods. There's definitely an element of nostalgia to these searches. It's like you're trying to recreate a piece of your childhood and trying to preserve it, as though to say, this is what it was like, this was part of it, and this broadens our understanding of life at a certain point in time. So yeah, more modern stuff. The internet definition is definitely more modern stuff, and I'll get into a few cases at some point.
Because, and you're definitely right, I think, with a lot of times the things from people's childhood. Because One of my favorite, and this is like slightly different, this is also kind of internet culture, so this goes down to internet. One of my favorite creepypastas, probably my favorite creepypasta, Candle Cove, takes place entirely on an internet message board. And it begins with the discussion of someone saying, "Hey, can anyone remember this show that used to be on, like, whatever channel, like called Candle Cove?" And people discussing and sharing their memories about it, and it gets a bit kind of strange. And it ends with a brilliant twist. But yeah, and I remember reading it, I was thinking, I've seen conversations like that on the internet. I think that's what made it feel so authentic. But
Did you
that's
see the
fascinating.
adaptation they did of that?
I haven't yet. It's on my to watch list.
Yeah, I was really fucking freaky, but I think it added like just to that because then you got to watch sort of the investigation and the fact that they made a TV show about people talking about a fictional TV show. I just thought it was like this is really adding to it. You know, like I'm a sucker for layered uncertainties. That's why I wrote like half of my thesis on House of Leaves. Yeah, no, because like definitely I can think of that, and bringing up creepypastas is really, I think, interesting because so many of them seem to revolve around like this concept of, oh, it's a TV show that didn't exist, or there'll always be that kind of thing, which I'm pretty sure was in Candle Cove as well, where it's like, oh no, you were just watching a TV, like a static TV screen, you know?
Or like a lot of times a lost episode of like the TV show, like Dead Bart of The Simpsons, or like now,
Squidward commits
yeah,
suicide.
and now these stories they're describing fictional lost episodes, they aren't episodes that are rumored to exist, but as it happens, there are real life lost episodes. Can't believe they made like the Squidward suicide creepypasta into a real thing.
I did. I will say there is,
Did
I think
they?
there's an inherent creepiness to lost media, even
Hmm.
some of the really innocent stuff. I think there's something, I guess, in today's world where we believe that everything's recorded forever on the internet, there's something unsettling about how easily a piece of media can be cut, can disappear, and become imperfectly remembered. I also just want to touch on something that I will not really be elaborating on, and that is genuinely disturbing pieces of lost media. So a trigger warning for serial killers and suicide here. Some I can get a bile fascination with real life pieces of lost media that are disturbing. There's bile fascination, such a thing. But I think it's my opinion that some lost media should stay lost. There was a very recent find, let's call it, where someone sent a Freedom of Information Act to the relevant government State Department in the US and got voice recordings of the Toy Box serial killer, then released the MP3 recordings online, and that's not okay. That should have stayed sealed away. Likewise, people seem to have a weird fascination with the suicide of Christine Chubbuck, a news anchor who committed suicide on air, and the audio recording of that news broadcast has leaked online, and it's just that should have stayed lost. Leave Christine Chubbuck alone. So just to touch on that, I understand bile fascination, but no, some media, it's absolutely okay that it stays lost.
Yeah, and just to kind of add my own thing to that, kind of reinforcing what Louise said, if you see any, just as a general thing, if you see anything like that circulating, you see people talking about it, and if you think like maybe, oh, it's not that bad, I can handle it, it is that bad. Just warning, just general warning.
We're stepping in with a quick public service announcement. We're sending jokes out of the room for this one for a second. Especially in light of the increasing amount of tragedies, global hate crimes, and domestic terrorism, which are happening far too frequently, videos are shared around of sensitive content, and they're sent around to unsuspecting people. So it really is a case of if you see mention of it, just like please take care because it will fuck you up.
And I know we're a lighthearted podcast that likes to talk about Morbius. In that episode, we sort of devolved into fits of giggles over the phrase, have sex, poop your pants. But, like, this is a really serious thing. And these are real people's lives. And they touch other real people's lives. Like, even though they're dead, their family still has to live with, oh, the recording of their loved one being brutally killed is just now available for free public consumption. So there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, but cop the fuck on.
Agreed. Just be careful.
No.
Don't be
a fucking prick.
Yeah.
It adds no cultural value to be able to actually witness these things. Just the Lost Media wiki page is enough if you want some basic facts.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what I think is really interesting thing about Lost Media and what it reflects about our culture is some of the more positive things that are the focus of searches, because often it's not really high quality stuff that has won like 27 Emmy Awards or something. It's shovelware DS games that like 10 people played because their mom bought it in a bargain bin in Tesco because she doesn't know what shovelware is. And I think the fact that people think stuff like, oh, shovelware, it's basically video games that were made en masse very cheaply. For example, video games about children's films, like, you know, B-movie for the DS or something. They're shoveled onto systems, but I think the fact that there's
classic
searches for Mean Girls DS or promotional bumpers from channels like Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon, that's just really sweet to me, because I love people saying, no, this is not unimportant. This tells us something about our culture. It tells us something about ourselves. These formed cornerstone memories for some people. And I love that about Lost Media. It's not snobby.
Hmm. Yeah. Because I think it comes back to, there's a quote from the Discworld, which I think really applies here. Like, personal is not the same as important. Because, like, I think, especially because it's been so universal, like you said, and how it comes from all of our childhoods, that what we associate with a piece of Lost Media is some sort of intensely personal like memory or emotion or something. And so that, like, it, like you said, it doesn't have to be something groundbreaking. It can just be, well, it brought me joy for a couple weeks when I was 7. Like, I have a piece of Lost Media which I feel like I keep Googling and finding out the name of, and then my brain just forgets. So I have this perpetual loop of trying to find a film I watched where the plot was centered around cold fusion. And I remember watching, like, the nuclear thing. And I remember watching it on a night where I, like, literally ripped a tooth out of my head.
Oh,
it wasn't sore, but it was like, oh, that'll be another 2 weeks before that tooth is ready to come out. And then I sort of just pulled it out of my head. Yeah, but no, because, like, I was like, oh, that's fun, you know, and I remember vaguely enjoying that film, but, like, it's probably not, like, a globally, like, it's not going to be the Criterion Collection, you know what I mean?
Just a random film, like.
Yeah, and Lost Media is, like, no film or video game or TV show or, heck, even website or flash game should be forgotten. And that is very beautiful to me. And I love following the searches of pieces of Lost Media that become obsessions of the community. I think one of the most famous ones in the community is A Day with SpongeBob SquarePants.
I've heard of this.
This recap will not be as good as Blame It on Jorge's recap. Go look up his history of The Day with SpongeBob SquarePants search. But basically, it was this bootleg film, and it was supposed to be live action, and the plot was this: SpongeBob is a Hollywood star who lives above water, and his agent says, your star power is failing. We gotta rejuvenate interest in you. So there's a contest and it's to spend a day with SpongeBob SquarePants and this little boy called Seth wins. And Seth and SpongeBob get into all sorts of hilarious hijinks. It was listed on Amazon. And a few years after its supposed release date, people were like, huh, has anyone ever actually seen this? So they go looking for a copy, but it's not available to buy off Amazon, and things just spiral. For one, the boy on the cover, who's jumping up, excited to be spending a day with SpongeBob SquarePants, is a stock image. And then they look up the company, Rigel Films, and it turns out they've mostly made really terrible documentaries about celebrities. And when they try to look up their website, their people's computers are infected by a Trojan horse virus. Ooh, and the address of the company on Google Maps is not in a shopping mall, but in a dumpster area behind a shopping mall. And when they call people involved with the company, they get really angry and closed off. And I think it ultimately turned out this film was never made and it was put as a placeholder on Amazon. But the implication is that the company was involved in money laundering. It's incredible. It truly is.
Man.
And like, that just created a whole mythos around what, if that had existed, would have been a very mediocre film. And I loved that. I think another favourite search of mine was Ray Mona's search for the lost live-action American Sailor Moon pilot. This one was more successful and far less shady, but I just loved how she interviewed people who worked on it, including one of the actresses and the men who actually were chosen to spearhead this pilot. And it, the way she framed it was a very interesting look of how anime could have come to America in an alternate reality, in that it would have all just been very cheesy live-action adaptations. And then she actually managed to get a copy of it, and it was incredible. I was like, this is amazing. It's so cheesy. I love it. But I think that one, I think, brings up a very thorny issue for lost media, and that is of copyright. I know I've been rambling for a few minutes, but I gotta go off about this. Lost media, as I've said, is a very broad definition. And while some of lost media is destroyed, a lot of it is inaccessible. So copies exist. The public just can't access them. And the only way that Ray Mona got to access this pilot was that she'd made contacts through her search. And one of the contacts helped her convince the CEO of the company who'd made this pilot to give Ray Mona permission to request it from the Library of Congress and then release it online. But so much of lost media is lost because one person loses the rights and it falls into this weird legal black hole. So I gotta say, piracy is always morally correct to preserve media. Like, I do not trust the fact, like, even with streaming services, it's so easy for them to just take a show off their services and seal it away in a vault, which is also why DVDs and physical media is really good.
Agreed.
Especially because, and now I think that I've never seen Star Wars, but I was watching TikToks of people who do that, because like, there's so many different versions of Star Wars as well, where George Lucas, especially in the early days, like, edited it. So like, the version we have now of the original trilogy is vastly different from multiple other versions, which, like, if you were lucky enough to buy them on DVD, that, like, the piece of media exists, but there's also, like, weird versions of it which once existed and still exist, but are way, way less accessible. Like, on, I think it's called, like, a laser disc or something. It's not a laser disc, but something like that, where it's like a giant vinyl-sized disc that you put into a player, but it's video, not just audio, like you would with a vinyl record. So, like, those things still exist, but you can readily go and buy and watch Star Wars, the original trilogy. And so, like, we have this weird, like, physical media thing, because you can't pirate those versions. They don't exist.
That is a very interesting one, and I had heard of that, that the original versions are lost. And again, that's sad. Because it's good to have the original versions for posterity. And that's definitely another worry with streaming services, is that things can be edited very easily. Otherwise, again, a brief trigger warning, 13 Reasons Why had a scene edited, and I think they were right to do it. But there could be other cases where they might edit it for a completely arbitrary reason. And people then would not have access to that version of it.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah, so
like...
I think, anyway.
Yeah, because there was that complaint that there was too much smoking in season 3 of Stranger Things, if I remember, which was a weird complaint to make for a show set in the 80s.
Yeah.
People did smoke back then, shockingly enough.
Well, like, when you watch any film which is, like, set in and, like, filmed during the 80s, they do that shit all the time. They do it on planes. You remember when people used to smoke on planes?
Or in the cinema?
Yeah.
People or still like do that. Building. I went to see a movie about 5 years ago, and some dude just started vaping. It was very irritating. Don't vape in the cinema, kids.
Yeah, that's good advice.
I give great life advice.
But yeah, because I was thinking when you said like lost media, that's like it exists but we can't access it, like is kind of a very recent example was the Batgirl movie.
Yes, that's yes. What I was thinking of before we started recording. That one terrifies me because almost as soon as it was announced, quick thinking employees went to save it so they could indeed preserve it, but it was literally gone within a minute of the announcement, which is terrifying.
Mm. Very much so. And I'm still angry about that, but as far as I know, it does exist. It's just been sealed away, which makes me hope that maybe there'll be a Blame It on Jorge video 10 years down the line about how the Batgirl movie was found.
Hopefully so. You gotta keep up hope for a lot of these pieces of lost media.
Genuinely.
Yeah. Here's
Oh, no,
go ahead.
Unfortunately, not every piece of lost media is preserved and archived as it should be. And this is how a lot of media becomes lost. Like with silent films, a huge amount of them have been lost through vault fires because the nitrate stock film is printed on is ridiculously flammable. So if just there's a little spark or something, hundreds of films can go up in smoke. Like, one of the most sought-after silent films is London After Midnight, and a copy of that existed until 1965, until the vault fire claimed it. Even with much newer media, the problem of technology obsolescence becomes huge. This one interests me, and it's not quite lost media, but in 1986, to celebrate the 900th anniversary of the Domesday Book, the BBC came up with this project where primary schools around the UK would use this computer system to record information about their local area, their daily lives, the like. Problem is, about 2 years after this, the system used to record the information became obsolete. And suddenly there were no more computers that could run all this information, and it ran the risk of being lost forever. That's how so much media becomes lost on the internet. Because look at the shutdown of Adobe Flash. A lot was archived. People were prepared. But there's so many Flash games and add-ons to websites that are now just inaccessible and lost. And there's also server outages. Possibly the biggest single loss of media in history was the MySpace music loss, where millions of songs were lost. And I think 500,000 have been recovered, but that's something like 3% of all the songs lost at most.
Shit.
So proper storage and preservation for the lost media is very important, and it's very important to have it on multiple platforms. El Supersonic Q recently did a video on its media that was found and then lost again. So this happens very, very easily.
Another strange lost media thing. Have you heard of the podcast Whatever Happened to Pizza at McDonald's?
I have not, no.
It's this like weirdly captivating, also hilarious like concept for a podcast. So like McDonald's used to do pizza back in the 80s and 90s. Now the quality of the pizza is arguable. They discontinued it all of a sudden, you know? So now they no longer do it. So in effect, it's a piece of lost media. But like what we were talking about earlier, it's not this world-shattering thing that McDonald's no longer does pizza, because there's other places where you can get pizza, specifically dedicated pizza places. But I love it. The cover art for it is this weird like rainbow swirl, and it's the caption is on the like image in white Comic Sans, but it's like, is it Weekly? Yeah, it's like Weekly or thereabouts, and it's up to like 280 episodes. This guy, Brian Thompson, just rings people on various people on the corporate ladder in McDonald's to ask them what happened to pizza in McDonald's. He does deep dives into the info sharing around the pizza, things like that. Like the latest episode, which I haven't listened to, which came out yesterday, the description reads, "I attempt to forensically analyze an original Canadian McDonald's pizza box I received as a gift from the editor of Funicular magazine." And it's kind of like very tongue-in-cheek humor, but like I like that this is just a podcast dedicated to a complete like finding and understanding a completely arbitrary loss of something.
This is what lost media is really all about. It's all about preserving the unimportant. It makes me think of a chocolate bar that you can't buy anymore, the Spots versus Stripes bar. Someone tweeted about it recently, and I was like, Spots versus Stripes by Cadbury's, my beloved.
Oh my god, yeah. It's also amazing. Like, you remember the Cadbury's Marvelous Creations? Those bastards are back.
Really?
I don't remember these.
I bought one in Tesco's. I bought the Jelly Pop and because I couldn't find them for ages. The only other place I found them recently was when I was in Edinburgh in 2021. I got one in some UK-only supermarket. I don't remember which one. But yeah, that's the only place I'd seen them. And then I was in Tesco's, the one on Fleet Street. And it was part of like a, you could mix and match like any two of these things for €4. So I got a big bar of jelly pop and candy and like a big share bag of Doritos for €4. So that's pretty good. But like those were gone. Those used to be like the next big thing.
Smart.
I love this because lost media is so truly expansive that some people are like, yeah, food is lost media. Lost action figures are lost media. And I love it.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I actually think of food because like this doesn't really count because like you can still get this bar. But like, do you remember when Yorkie had the It's Not For Girls marketing?
Oh my god,
I do. Which, because I have never had a Yorkie bar. I don't know, maybe the marketing worked or something, but apparently, according to some people I know, they're not nice, the bars.
They're just a block of milk chocolate. Now, I love them. I will buy them over other brands of chocolate bar, which are just milk chocolate for some reason. That's not that's not even getting into the orange or like raisin and biscuit flavors they do, which is, the raisin biscuit one's pretty good. It's a purple wrapper. It's pretty good. But yeah, like there's nothing special, but for so long that was their brand. I think I used to have a mug. Do you remember back in the day when every Easter egg used to come with like a proper big size mug?
We still have our mini eggs one.
Yeah, I used to get a Yorkie egg every year. So I had this massive collection of Yorkie mugs. And I'm pretty sure one of them had, like, at least one of them had the Yorkie logo on one side. And on the back, it said not for girls. Or, you know, or whatever it was. Not for girls, not for women.
Yes, it's not for girls, I remember.
Any girl who dies instantly.
Or their egg cracks and they realize they're trans. So, like, really?
One of the two.
Yeah, either Yorkie is really, really misogynistic or it's very trans progressive.
It's just, like, one of them. Like, one of the... Because, like, I was just thinking, like, you know, saying, like, I've never had a Yorkie bar in my life. And, like, I just probably wouldn't... They wouldn't even occur to me if it weren't for that marking. Because I just remember it. Like, I just remember it always being there. Like, I remember once my cousin got a Yorkie, I think, again, an Easter egg in my... And, like, her mother was, like, you know, like, joking with her, saying, like, oh, you have to give that back. Like, it's not for girls. Like, I'm just like, yeah, that, like, they don't... The marketing isn't... That's not the marketing anymore. This is lost media, in my opinion.
That gets to the heart of lost media, in that if these pieces of a lot of these pieces of media had never been lost, they'd be so mundane. This is actually summed up really well in the Doctor Who meme group I was in, because Doctor Who is one of the most infamous cases of lost media, but there's a meme and it was like lost episodes lore versus the actual episode, and you know, the actual episode is, you know, a bit of cheesy 60s sci-fi, but the lore is like private collectors and being found abandoned in church basements and big name fans secretly holding on to episodes to trade for other episodes. So much going on. That kind of leads me on to another topic, which is why some people deliberately don't release lost media. Doctor Who's an infamous example.
Before we get into, I just want to circle back to something you said before, which is that lost media is the preservation of the unimportant. And I think that's really key, especially when we go into why people don't. Just because, like, as well, there's so many organizations which are devoted to preserving important things, be it the Criterion Collection with films, or like the OPW in Ireland with like ancient sites, the National Park Service, you know, like with those dedicated areas of beauty. And so it's like all of those are taken care of. So like, what do we as normal people have to do? Like, what do we get to look after? So we put all of that care into something which is not important.
Yes, and whether that is your bumper from Nickelodeon circa 2010, or again, a very lost, obscure pilot for a failed adaptation of an anime, that is beautiful. Yeah. But yes, I'll talk about people hoarding it, and Doctor Who is a very famous example because private film collectors exist. And as of the recording in early 2023, there are allegedly...
Oh god, it's 2023.
There are allegedly at least 6 episodes in the hands of private collectors who are not willing to return them to the BBC, and thus making them accessible to the public. And I think part of it is that they're afraid at this stage that people are just going to come and punch them in the face or something. But there's also this whole idea that you have something no one else does, and that somehow makes you special. Which I disagree with. There are slightly more valid concerns, which is people can get into trouble. And look, I gotta say, pirating is always morally correct. You gotta preserve stuff. But there's a huge controversy when the last Wicked Witch episode of Sesame Street was found, and the lost media was like... That was iconic. Big Bird was like, I'm going to beat up the Wicked Witch of the West. No wonder it was banned from television. It was iconic. But the Lost Media Wiki, which is one of the key gathering points on the internet for these searches and for information, that said, hey, please do not put this on the actual wiki. I have had there's been stuff in the past where people have put links to this like certain Lost Media on the website, and I've been threatened with a lawsuit, and this person's like, I am just one person trying to run this wiki. And people are like, wow, Lost Media Wiki taking an L, what a loser. And it's like, there's a difference between outright defending copyright versus saying, I am one person trying to get by who cannot afford a legal battle. So I think, definitely, I encourage leaking, but please make sure you are safe to do so and have robust protections, because in this capitalist hellscape, a lot of capitalists want Lost Media to stay lost.
They really do.
The concept of private collectors brings up something really interesting, or at least to me, in its prevalence, is the idea of like art, like paintings and sculptures, because there's so much of that, like outside of media like TV and film and things, there's so much what we would consider precious art missing, which is supposedly in the hands of private collectors that that was stolen ages ago and now is traded hands through private dealers. And it's formed the basis of so much media now. I know it's more on the like important side of things, but like I think it's interesting that media which we have access to now is being shaped so much by Lost Media, like especially those weird Dan Brown. I don't know what genre Dan Brown is in. Do either of yous?
No.
I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah, because it's sort of like it's sort of historical fiction, but not. And it's sort of a thriller, but not. Yeah, I once asked someone what genre is Dan Brown, and they just said bad, and I was like, oh, okay.
New genre, wake up, babe, new genre just dropped.
My dad was literally sorting out our bookshelves the other night and was like, why do we have two copies of the Da Vinci Code? We need to get rid of them.
Yeah, but there's so many like that. There's but also here's the thing: so many of them just have the Nazis as villains who are now like immortal, or they're really old, and it's like, can you guys not think of another antagonist? It's just the Nazis again. Like,
they're back.
Don't take this as me saying Nazis aren't villains. They are, but like, they don't need to be the villain of your story. Where it's like, we're gonna find a painting.
Yeah, make a private collector hoarding famous paintings or lost Doctor Who episodes the villains. I swear to God, if there's someone out there right now hoarding episode 4 of The Mythmakers, which is Katarina's debut in Doctor Who, release it to the BBC right now.
That's me with David Zaslav, the new CEO of Warner Brothers, who like with the who like is the reason that we are not getting the Batgirl movie as of now.
Yeah, but also Peter Safran and James Gunn just talk massive shit about it as well. They're like, oh, it was unreleasable. No, it wasn't.
Like I David Zaslav and co, better hope I never run into them, because I will be very cross.
Lost Media is all about accessibility, and that is what I love. It's not only the belief that these things should be found, but fully accessible. So much of Lost Media is not actually media that has been completely destroyed. It's media that's locked away in a vault somewhere, or just hidden. And it's like, no, we should have access to all these things. It should not depend on one rich dude being like, nah, I don't feel like releasing this.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Mm. Do you think we're ever going to get to a stage where all of the lost media is going to be recovered? Like, because you're more familiar with this lost media Wikipedia page than I am, and potentially, like, a lot of our listeners, if they're listening to this, would know prior context. Like, how much of it do you think is just misplaced or in the hands of a private collector, and how much of it is gone forever in the case of the, you know, like, warehouse fires where celluloid is stored improperly and haphazardly, or someone has purposely destroyed it?
I don't think every piece of lost media will be found, unfortunately. To use a Doctor Who example, there is one episode we know is never coming back, and that is an episode called The Feast of Stephen, because it was broadcast on Christmas Day, but Christmas TV wasn't really a thing in 1965, so it was intended as a disposable one-off, and when the rest of the story was sold abroad, a copy wasn't even made of that episode. It was just, no. And then there's obviously a lot of historical lost media. So again, Library of Alexandria, manuscripts of ancient books that we maybe only know about because they're referenced in other books. Trey the Explainer is a very interesting video on historical lost media. Look it up. But I think there is a lot of lost media that is hidden in vaults, but also hidden on VHS tapes. You know, people 30 years ago were just taping their favourite sitcom, and that's how a lot of lost TV ads are found. Or again, I was watching, you'll love this one, Al. It was a lost media of The Sopranos. And there were certain little webisodes that were released, and it was possible to download them. So it's possible someone has an old computer with all these webisodes downloaded and they just need to check. So I think there's definitely a lot that can be recovered. And even with the older pieces of lost media, there's recently a Betty Boop short recovered from Russia, which is pretty cool. So sometimes you just never know.
Hmm.
I choose to be optimistic. Because lost media is truly found in the strangest of ways. Like, there's this silent film, and it was found in a cleaning supply closet of a mental hospital in Norway, because I think the original founding director was of the hospital was friends with the movie's director, and he had a copy. So, you never know.
You just never know.
You could be sitting on lost media right now, dear listener. Have a chair.
I'm sitting on a chair.
I'm sitting on a bed.
Yeah.
Is there a piece of lost media under it?
I'll have a look, but
if you find an episode of Doctor Who, let me know.
Of course.
What exactly is, like, what exactly is in, like, why are people looking for lost TV ads?
I think this ties back into,
I don't know, it just seems like a strange thing for people to go for, like, an ad for something.
I think this ties back into the whole everything is important. And I think especially in our culture, TV ads become very iconic. Like, I'm sure there are ads you saw as a child that are seared into your brain.
Yeah, the Crush and a Cat ad.
There was one particular ad, search for an ad, that started like this. It was an ad for Subway. And the guy who remembered it, he was a Lego YouTuber, so he recreated the ad in Lego. And eventually it was found. But to him, it was so iconic, he made it in Lego to help get it found. And again, amazing. It's not like these are the most important things culturally, but they form people's childhood memories, and they tell us a lot about culture. Like, in my final year of college, I did an essay on TV advertisements in 1960s Ireland, and what that said about women and women's roles, which is really fascinating. So I think not only are a lot of these pieces of lost media important personally, but they do tell us something about the wider culture at the time. No matter how insignificant they seem, there's usually something we can glean from it. A bit like, as I mentioned earlier, Raymona pointing out that the live-action American Sailor Moon pilot is a glimpse of how anime could have come to the US had things gone a bit differently.
Mm.
What ad did you mention there, Nigel?
The Crush a Cat ad.
What's that?
It's an ad for this brand of milk called Crusha. And the ad was like this stock sort of like image thing. Like it was someone had taken a photo of it and sort of printed it out. Like, I'm trying to describe the composite of it. It was like someone had taken these things and printed them out and then put them together in a composite. Like, it felt like they were raised in a way. And then there was these cats, which were also like stock images of cats, but they were kind of like moving on their own as like fixed, like sprites almost. And they had this song they were singing about Crusha. And they all had these deep voices like, Crusha! Crusha!
I looked it but up every time and I would remember it! Oh my god, that's a memory.
Every time they would say that, a bottle of milk would fall onto a cat and crush it flat.
Rip.
Yeah. Hold on.
Some crusher, a little crusher. Milk keeps me fit and tastes so great. I want some crusher, a glass of crusher. It's tough enough to make milk shake. Add milk, or we'll crush her.
I think you gotta edit that audio in.
Wait, hold on a second.
I'm so glad this isn't lost.
Yeah, but it was just something that had burned itself into my brain. It's bonkers. Yeah, it was just this like these random TV ads of actually just seeing that person wearing a hat. So here's a fun story about like a bizarre piece of semi-lost media. My French teacher was in a band, and this band was called Uberé, and they make genuinely kind of okay music. It's this kind of like French Irish trad punk type thing. But he always said that he was in the band, and then I could never find any like evidence that he was in the band. And then I listened to a song because they're on Spotify, and they have this song called Terre Uberé, the land of Uberé. Uberé is kind of a nonsense word. And if you listen to it on Spotify, he has a verse where he's the only one who sings in English, despite the fact that he's Belgian. But then if you watch the music video for that song, he's not in it.
That's really strange.
That is strange. Because before I had never like listened to it on Spotify. It was just as a joke, and I had like looked it up once on YouTube, and I was like, oh well, he's not in any of these videos.
That's the thing, these lost media mysteries often have really strange details, like the ones that become famous do. One of my favorite ones I haven't gotten to mention yet is Beebus 1, which is an allegedly lost video game. It's listed in 2 or 3 mail order catalogs in 1987. It was supposedly for the NES. And there's all sorts of theories that it was a copyright trap, it was a mistranslation of a Japanese title. It's bizarre. And it's just the bizarre details like that hook you.
I suppose what kind of gets those ones to be like, to be famous, like like the fact that they're a little strange.
Exactly. They're a little bit harder to get to.
Hmm.
Yeah, what I will say is, as much as I love the Lost Media community, there's definitely a bit of a bias. Like, I can understand the focus on more modern media because it's easier to search for. A lot of people involved in it are usually still alive. And you don't need as many qualifications. But a lot of it is American and English language. And I wish there would be more focus on non-English language, non-American pieces of Lost Media. Like, the only Irish media lost media search I can think of is Rimini Riddle, which was this weird puppet show that aired on RTE2 back in the 90s. And I think this is a case where copies exist, but there's something weird at the copyright holders. Like, I don't think RTE can legally release it. Like, it'd be nice to get people on the case of that one.
Hey, Louise, do you remember your...
images of it, it looked super spooky.
Louise, do you remember your last media? Last summer, I think.
Yes, I do. This one, it wasn't lost, but I just could not think of the name of the beer brand. That's an ad that haunted me. Like, I just remembered it as this dude, his truck driver, he's delivering beer, but his truck breaks down in the middle of nowhere. But luckily, there's a lovely old lady who lives nearby. So he's like, can I use your phone? Because it's 2004, so his mobile doesn't work, I guess. And he goes in, and suddenly a trap door opens, and he falls into a basement, and she closes it and steals the beer, and haunted me.
Yeah, because I remember when we found it, I remember I was telling my mom about it, and she was like, oh yeah, I remember that ad. Because I had no, because you were telling me about it, I was like, I have no memory of this whatsoever.
Neither did my brother, and neither did my parents. I was like, this really terrified me. I definitely remembered the ad as more terrifying than it actually was. Like, when I watch it as an adult, it's darkly funny. But as a child, I'm like, she trapped him in the basement and she laughed.
Like, honestly, it's just very, like, one of the best things about, like, Lost Media or things like that is just you're remembering things and you're trying to figure out whether you dreamed it or not.
That was a huge part of the infamous Clockman short search.
Yes!
Like, this dude literally posts, like, I was sick one day as a child and I saw this weird thing. Can you help me find it? It turns out,
like, was this a fever dream?
He misremembered some of the details, and the short had actually been on YouTube for years. It was made by a Czechoslovakian company, and in the original language, it was called Opravde Sally, not Clockman.
That's a Blame It on Jorge video.
It is. He does very good history of that search. There's also stuff where it's now so, the search is so muddy that people have no idea if it exists or not. Such an example is Hitogata, which is an alleged Japanese PSA where two stick figures flash in and out. There's a railway in the background and people think it's a rail safety PSA, but no one actually knows at this stage if it exists or not. So some searches like that are hard because if so many people are jumping in with their own theories, the actual information can become lost, especially when you have very little to go off of. Because it was easier, for example, with the American Sailor Moon pilot because some footage had leaked online and there's some definitive things known about it. Whereas with Hitogata, it was someone's memory.
Yeah.
And so much was just, has been piled on top of it. It's like, is this even real? What information's actually concrete? So that is one disadvantage. The less you have to go on, the harder it is.
Sort of muddies the water a bit.
It does.
Yeah. It's like trying to remember the hyper-specific video, like, that you had on tape, like, as a kid. before streaming service or anything, and just trying to figure out, was this movie even real?
Yeah, because like, it could turn out to be a scene from something else.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting, though, like, just again, like, just about memory. Like, you know, the fact that these things get, like, found or, like, searches him because, like, just someone, like, remembered it and decided to go online and talk about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I say there are so many pieces of lost media right now that aren't being searched for just because it hasn't taken off in the right way. Like, it, no one has posted about it on the right forums. No one's video about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's definitely interesting then when it's found how memory compares to reality. Like, one of my favourite little details from when the last batch of Doctor Who Lost episodes was found was that some of the episodes were set in the London Underground, and there was a poster for a film called In the Heat of the Night in the background, and literally no one had remembered that. So that's just so neat to me. It's like people had completely forgotten about that, but then when it was rediscovered, you get to see all these little details that would have otherwise just faded into oblivion.
It's pretty cool.
So yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've missed, and I don't think so.
We have lost media, hyperfixations.
We do, we do.
What is your piece of lost media?
We have a couple.
So there was, originally there was episode 8, the one with Niamh on deck. We had to re-record because the audio was so bad. We were using a different recording bot for that
one. It sounded like skipping CD.
Mm. So we re-recorded that one and put it out. Finn's episode on Klingon, we re-recorded because we actually just, I have no idea where that went. Like, I checked all of my drives, and there was episodes before and after saved, because this is when we had, like, the big backlog of, like, months of episodes before we switched to a weekly release, and it wasn't there, so we had to re-record that one. Jen's episode on weird books, we had to re-record because, for some reason, part of the audio switched out to audio from an earlier episode of Hyperfixations, the one on dragons we did with Shal Hevet, and an episode of Archive Admirers, which we did, which I did, which is weird because I hadn't edited this at all. This was raw audio I had downloaded from the recording software. Our episode we did on Inish Boffin is no longer on the feed. We lost the first draft of Max's episode, didn't we? His audio,
the audio was funny, and I think it was that Max's audio didn't record properly.
No, there was nothing. It was just an empty track is what it was. So we were fine, and it had a track labeled for him, but it was just literally an empty track, and so we had to re-record that and put that out. And I think that's it.
Yeah, when we re-recorded that one, because I remember we didn't end up re-recording for a while, and I think that worked out well because, as Max said, like, we forgot most of the weird stuff that happened and that we're who
it was. I was
not
also extremely delirious. Like, I was.
Yeah, no, I was really sick. So Max would just be like, and then there was this Batman script where, like, I don't know, Joker ate someone. Like, that didn't happen, but, like, you know, and Nigel would be like, might what? Well have-
Did he discuss the lost Filipino unlicensed film Batman versus Dracula?
I think he did. Yeah. Or that might have been the first. Yeah. But I do remember
Sherlock Holmes versus Dracula, because I wanted them to kiss.
Yeah. That was one thing in the first episode. Not in the first episode, in the first draft of that episode. Nigel said, like, so it's just someone putting Sherlock and, like, Dracula together in a sandbox and pushing them together and making them kiss.
Like that scene in SpongeBob where Patrick has Squidward in the pickle and is like, kiss! And Squidward's like, no!
The funniest part about that episode is just with the Batman v Superman, and then Matt's like, and then the movie's over, and we're like, and they kiss! And he's like, no! And we're like, no!
Lost media scene with gay kiss confirmed.
Honestly. It was funny that it became lost media because the whole episode was about unreleased scripts.
I can't wait for Blame It on Jorge to do a Hyperfixations lost episode, and it's really ominous and people are like, wow, this is so uncanny.
If Blame It on Jorge wants to come on the podcast, he is more than welcome. No. Sorry?
We wouldn't say no.
Yeah, like, you know, just saying. I'm just saying.
Can't blame him if he does.
Hey.
I hope that doesn't immediately turn him off. Oh, God.
This episode has actually just deleted itself from the internet because of that pun.
It became lost media.
Lost media episode is lost media confirmed.
Mm.
Honestly. I feel like that's everything, unless you have anything else.
Yes, I think that is about it. So yeah, to sum up, every piece of media is important in some way, whether personally or whether it can tell us even just a little bit about the time and place it was created in. And be careful with how you preserve things, because no form of storage lasts forever. Not one.
Mm. And be sensible with what you share. With yes. What lost media you share.
Yes. Some media needs to stay lost.
Exactly. Louise, where can we find you?
You can find me at TweetingSnail on Twitter or YeSnail99 on Instagram. Yeah, that's
very cool. Nice. Nigel, where can we find you?
You can mainly find me on Twitter at SpicyNigel, where recently I've been tweeting a lot of Among the Stacks stuff. I built a website for it, so that's pretty fun. I've officially announced that.
Hey!
Some more cast announcements. I'm rereading James Joyce for fun. Oh, yeah.
I'm reading James Joyce for fun.
For fun? Which one?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not for college anymore. Like, I'm just starting a portrait of young artist as a man. I'm also reading the portrait of the artist as a young man.
Yeah, that's the one I'm on at the minute. I'm like nice. 110 pages through it. Yeah. What about you, Ali? Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AliCat_. Ali spelled like alleyway. Cat spelled with a K. And you can find me on Instagram at Ali_K_Keegan. You can find the podcast at HyperfixationsP on Twitter.
Or at HyperfixationsPod on Instagram. Rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or GeoCities webpage, wherever. If you would like to come onto the show to discuss one of your hyperfixations, please feel free to reach out at any of the aforementioned social media. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you didn't, nobody likes a fucking narc.
And that is all for this week. Louise, once again, it was an absolute delight to have you on. Thank you
for having me on again. I loved getting to ramble about lost media. And one last appeal to those private film collectors hoarding Doctor Who, just release them, please.
We won't even be angry.
Yeah.
Like, please. And thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
Just disappointed, not mad.
Yeah, just a little disappointed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Signing off.